Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. You can text the show, 713-572-4610. Here is D'Amico Ryan's audio quality, decent, not great, but you can hear. This is courtesy of Aaron Wilson, who I guess was at the State of the Union, or at least had video from it on his timeline that the Texans did earlier this week. I believe on Monday they had the State of the Union where they had a bunch of season ticket holders. They did it at NRG on the floor of the stadium there. And they had a chance, gave some of the season ticket holders a chance to ask questions of D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, who were up on stage together. Here was D'Amico Ryans when asked about the plan on the offensive line for the Texans this offseason.
It's what I truly believe in as well, that the offensive line is about being a cohesive unit. Right? It's about all those guys playing together, and it's not always about the offensive line as well. It's about, all right, the timing of the play, right? The depth, the timing of the play, the quarterback playing on time, running back stepping up and blocking, tight ends blocking. It's 11 guys working together. And I know we may have had some miscues on the offensive line last year, right, that didn't look so well, but I feel like we're in a really good place with where we are now, and I'm excited to see this group go and perform together.
Okay.
No, and, well, he's 100% correct. I think it's because the offensive line was such a glaring issue. When I started to lose patience with Bobby Slowick, and where I didn't really have any excuses for him, was that it was very evident in every position group that there were times when guys didn't know what the hell they were doing. A lot of those screens, as much as we hate the screens, a lot of the failed screens weren't on the offensive line. They were on wide receivers not knowing who they were supposed to block. There was on the ball carriers themselves at time. There was just, everything was so disjointed. And it just got to the point where it was so obvious that defenses were kind of baiting the Texans into doing what they wanted, that Bobby Slowick was underperforming across the board. So D'Amico saying that, I think a lot of people are looking at that and saying, like, a lot of people want to say, told you so, it wasn't, the offensive line wasn't that bad. Well, no, they got rid of three of those offensive linemen.
Yeah.
They got rid of, the offensive line coach isn't coming back. It was across the board. There were a lot of issues all over the place.
It's the only position group that had massive turnover this offseason on that side of the football. Like, all the tight ends are the same. All the receivers are the same. They drafted a couple guys, brought in a couple new guys, but they weren't, I mean, they were, that was a bloodletting on the offensive line in terms of letting guys go, or in the case of Kenyon Green and Laremy Tunsil, trading guys away.
I don't interpret that as D'Amico saying that the offensive line wasn't that bad. I interpret it as, like, no, actually, guys, it was really bad all over. It was, as we saw, I mean, the tight ends, the wide receivers, the offensive line, the running backs and pass protection, there are a lot of guys that just were not functioning at an NFL level, at a competitive NFL level.
There is the starting offensive line. I mean, three of the five guys that started week one are gone. So there's going to be at least 60% turnover and likely 80% turnover once you move Titus over to left guard and somebody else is playing right tackle. And so, yeah, like, just the behavior of the team in general would indicate that, yeah, it's an issue with everybody. It's a checklist. Like, guys, you know, all the position groups, including quarterback, there's culpability for everybody in this. But, yeah, like, the offensive line, I get what D'Amico's doing, too. I mean, he's standing in front of a bunch of season ticket holders and just solely blame the offensive line.
Right.
He's not going to do that.
No, I think that probably, you know, even in Nick last year when he said it was a lazy narrative to talk about that the offensive line was so bad, I disagree with it being lazy, because it was, dude, I was sending stuff out to people just asking guys, you know, O-line players and coaches, like, what the hell are they doing here? I don't get it. Like, there was nothing lazy about it. I was trying to figure out what the hell they were doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. But I think it's lazy if you ignore that there were a lot of issues elsewhere as well.
Yep. So that was D'Amico at the State of the Union with the season ticket holders earlier this week. So Greg Rosenthal and JP Acosta, Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com, you've been on his podcast before, right, Seth?
Yeah, I've been. He has the NFL Daily.
Yeah.
And I've been on it after Texans games.
Yeah. So you know, two respected voices in the NFL. They did a draft of head coaches, and ultimately, this just turns into a power ranking of the head coaches. They're drafting back and forth. D'Amico Ryans, ninth coach taken in the coaches draft by NFL Daily.
I'd love to get bent out of shape about this, except I might accuse both these guys of succumbing to the Peter Schrager dynamic. Can you pull up our Peter Schrager? Has D'Amico really earned being above Mike Tomlin and Jim Harbaugh just yet?
Well, Nick Sirianni won the Super Bowl last year. He's 15th on the list. Yeah.
I would say even Dan. I don't think it's fair to put D'Amico above Dan Quinn right now, for given just how long his career has been and what he did last year.
Dan Quinn's been to a Super Bowl, and he got the Washington Commanders to the NFC title game last year.
Yeah, I think they've
he's 14th, by the way.
This is an aura vote for D'Amico, I think.
Yeah.
Aura, D'Amico gets into the top 10 because of his aura, because of his energy, because of their anticipation for what he might do in the future.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously, I think he's a really good coach. I was a little surprised given the accomplishments of some of these guys, these are the names that are ahead of him. Andy Reid is one. That was easy.
Yeah.
Sorry, Cataldi. Sean McVay is two. Dan Campbell is three. If someone had told you the day that Dan Campbell had his introductory press conference that in 4 years, I guess it was, he got hired in 2021.
Yeah.
That he would be considered the third best coach in the NFL?
I would, if you told me the day of, I would say no. But I went back because I got into it with some Lions fans about that whole thing, because some joke I made. I went back and I watched the entire press conference. And so a week later, I thought, okay, no, there's some substance to this guy.
The day of is what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, the day of. Like, that's where I am with Liam Cohen, though, too. Liam Cohen, because it was one stupid Duval.
Yep.
I went back and watched that whole press. Yeah, I went back and watched the press conference. Okay, this guy, I actually like a lot of what he's saying.
Is D'Amico the least viral coach in the NFL? He doesn't have any moments like the one Ben's been banging in there, like it's a jukebox.
Yeah, yeah. So he needs to fart or something in the middle of
man.
An interview.
Yeah, D'Amico,
do something notable and embarrassing.
Do something at a press conference, D'Amico, to give us a hotkey. We needed D'Amico.
I mean, okay, so Dan Campbell, I'm cool with that.
Dan Campbell, three. Kevin O'Connell is four on this list.
I'd have to say, based on results so far and then head-to-head performance, that I'd have to
head-to-head
performance,
but ahead of D'Amico. But I'm in general that Kevin O'Connell is fourth on this. What's the furthest the Vikings have gotten with Kevin O'Connell as the head coach?
He gets a little bit of the nerd vote from these guys. I think he's
definitely
still perceived as this guy that's just like a more gentle mannered Kyle Shanahan.
Well, and turning Sam Darnold into what everybody thought Sam Darnold was supposed to be when he was drafted in 2018 probably carries a lot of weight with these guys.
Or at least a closer version to it.
Well, I mean, he got paid decent franchise quarterback money by a team. You know, like Seattle signed him to be their guy.
But then he puts him up. See, I can't have Kevin O'Connell above Kyle Shanahan.
That's what I'm saying.
For everything Kyle Shanahan has accomplished, I feel like he's losing out because it looks like he's in a bad situation right now.
Yeah, there may be some recency
bias. And San Francisco
bias.
Might have missed their window. But somehow Kyle Shanahan's less of a coach because of it.
Yeah, like I think Kevin O'Connell's a really good coach. You know, if Kevin O'Connell were the coach of my football team, I would be excited about having him. Now, I like D'Amico Ryans, but Kevin O'Connell hasn't won a playoff game yet. He's been the coach there for 3 years in Minnesota. 2022, 2023, 2024. Now he's gone 13-4. He went 7-10 when he had a bunch of injuries at quarterback. That was the year Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles. And then he went 14-3 last year. So he's been, the years that he's had healthy quarterbacks, he's been excellent in the regular season. He's lost in the wild card round in both of those seasons. Kevin O'Connell.
And one of those was the Daniel Jones, the guy that he's getting so much credit for.
Yes.
So, that's the one I'm offended by so far, Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connell, yet to win a playoff game, and he's
All right, I'm officially offended.
I'm not as much offended about D'Amico as I am just the rest of the, like, Kyle Shanahan's, John Harbaugh. Like,
Kevin, John Harbaugh, Sean Payton is at number 7, and Matt LaFleur is at number 8.
Yeah, like any of these, Matt LaFleur, okay, whatever. But like Sean Payton, John Harbaugh, especially those are championship head coaches. And I know that the Ravens, you know, they had a period there where they had, you know, they went into the abyss there before they got Lamar Jackson, and now they got Lamar, and they're considered one of the 5 or 6 best teams in football every year. Sean Payton, you know, who we criticized when he took the Denver job, that it was a cash grab. I know I did, at least, that was a cash grab, and Sean Payton's just, he's not into it, and he's done a good job in Denver so far. Like, I think the O'Connell one feels way more aura-like than D'Amico Ryan's right now, to me, you know?
Yeah. An odd one, too, is they put Vrabel back at the back end of it. Vrabel's 18th,
yeah,
and Mike McDonald is 19th. And yeah. I feel like, okay, well, Mike McDonald in his first year of like at least had a competitive football team.
Yeah.
It's a futures bet with Mike Vrabel, I think.
Well, Vrabel's gotten to an AFC title game with Tennessee.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You know what? I'm completely discounting his whole, you're right. Okay. You know,
he was a head coach before.
I completely am discounting everything that he did, which was actually really impressive in Tennessee.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
The first time head coaches are not eligible for this draft. So people wondering, oh, where's Liam Cohen? Where's this guy? Yeah. Where's that guy? They're not eligible for this draft. So there's 27 guys on here right now.
The guys, the four last place guys feel very much like hot seat guys. It's Zach Taylor, Brian Daboll, Raheem Morris, and Brian Callahan.
Yes.
Callahan's probably not actually on the hot seat, but I wouldn't be surprised if he turned up.
He would be on the hot seat. You know what will get him on the hot seat? It will be if Cam Ward just looks completely flummoxed as a rookie. Like, if he
botches it within it. Because then you got to say, well, all right, well, we got to bring in a coach that maybe can't get something out of him.
Yeah, got to. If Cam Ward just looks like he ain't getting it, they ain't cutting Cam Ward, put it that way. You know, they're like Brian Callahan. So I think hot seat is appropriate for him. And definitely those other guys. They're of the coaches that have won Super Bowls on this list. Again, this is the NFL Daily's head coaches draft. D'Amico Ryans is 9th on here. The Super Bowl winners that are on this list. There's 7 existing head coaches in the NFL that have won a Super Bowl, which makes you realize how many Belichick won. Like, only 7? Yeah, Belichick won like 6 of them in the last 25 years. Andy Reid won. Sean McVay 2. We mentioned that. John Harbaugh is 6. Sean Payton is 7. Mike Tomlin is 10th. So D'Amico Ryans is ahead of Mike Tomlin on this list. D'Amico Ryans is ahead of 3 Super Bowl winning head coaches. Mike Tomlin 10th, Pete Carroll 13th, and Nick Sirianni, who won last year's Super Bowl, 15th on the list.
I'll say, with Tomlin's an interesting one, because so for D'Amico to be right ahead of Tomlin, Tomlin was a defensive-minded head coach who stepped into just an incredible situation, because he already had Dick LeBeau as his defensive coordinator. So he retained Dick LeBeau, who was already a Hall of Fame caliber defensive coordinator. And then he also had Ben Roethlisberger. And then he hired Bruce Arians, I believe, if I remember correctly. He hired Bruce Arians. So that was a really, really smart thing that he did.
Yeah.
If it was his decision. But that's where, I guess, the difference in just judging the first couple of years, it's kind of apples and oranges. D'Amico came into a situation much, much worse than Tomlin had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Now, Mike Tomlin.
But obviously, having said all that, Tomlin should be ahead of D'Amico Ryans right now in the head coach race.
Tomlin's calling card right now is he can take whatever gets dealt to him, you know, in Pittsburgh and turn it into something that is at least a respectable product. They've never been bad with Mike Tomlin. Literally never been sub 500 with Mike Tomlin as a head coach. The issue is they haven't won a playoff game since 2016. You are living in purgatory in Pittsburgh right now. Like, you're in – that's the worst spot to be in. Just, you know, hey, we're 10-7 every year and we lose in the first round of the playoffs.
This ranking is depressing me, Sean, as I'm looking at all these coaches. That's because it just reminds you of how brief and fleeting actual respect in the NFL is. It's so much a what have you done for me lately. The fact that Pete Carroll is sitting there at 13th.
13th, whereas, you
know, man. A decade ago, Pete Carroll would have been right up there, top 3 or so. Now, this is who you would hire today.
Yeah.
So you got to take that into account.
Yeah.
But no amount of vivaciousness and youthful enthusiasm will rescue him from the fact that he's 73 years old when it comes to drafting a coach for the future.
Kevin Stefanski's been the head coach of the year two of the last five seasons. He's 16th on this list. You're right, man. It's it is. Brian Daboll was coach of the year 3 years ago. He's 25th. He's 25th. That just goes to show you, man. Like you get dealt a bad hand at quarterback. Like Brian Daboll stepped in and actually made Daniel Jones a respectable quarterback for a year. Like, which led to them extending him, which led to Brian Daboll having to continue to coach him and waste a couple more years.
They did too well in a year where they probably should have won three games.
If Brian Daboll just comes in and Daniel Jones just does what he had done the previous 3 years, the Giants might have C.J. Stroud right now. Daniel Jones was good was the year leading into the Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud draft, you know?
I feel like Daboll, after watching the offseason Hard Knocks last year, Daboll seems like a guy that is content to just let the GM call the shots for the most part. And if he were paired with the right GM, it might be a completely different scenario. But I don't think Joe Shane's a good GM. So he's just kind of – so Daboll, you're going to get the goofiest version of Daboll because he's just letting the GM be a bad GM.
Yeah. Man, D'Amico, head of Sean McDermott, who's been to an AFC title game or two. D'Amico's getting a lot of love in this thing, man, for sure. I'm curious where the people feel. D'Amico Ryan's ninth on this head coach's draft list out of the 27 head coaches that are eligible for it. No first-timers. How you feeling about that? 713-572-4610. Text message, Raheem Morris was just hired last year. How is he on the hot seat? Well, A, it's the NFL. You can get on the hot seat anytime. I would say B, that Raheem Morris has been a head coach in a couple of places now. He's got a bit of a retread vibe. And they've got Michael Penix Jr., I think similar to the Brian Callahan dynamic. You know, you draft a young quarterback. If that young quarterback is failing, it's going to fall on the head coach. Well,
yeah, and the whole thing with the Raheem Morris, with the Falcons, it's honestly way more about there's a dynamic there where it feels like there's some kind of internal struggle about the hiring of Raheem Morris. The process by that it came to, it didn't feel like he was as much of their genuine choice as an organization. And they've got like the battle between some of the executives in the front office and the owner and like trying to get Arthur Blank's favor on your side. It seems like a murky mess over there.
Yeah.
The whole way they've handled their quarterback situation in paying Kirk Cousins and then drafting Michael Penix, it feels like there's a few too many Chiefs in the room. And that's where the stories that came out about interviewing Belichick and the drama that was unfolding within the organization, it doesn't feel like a safe place for anybody in Atlanta.
Did you we'll talk about Belichick and this story about him maybe being engaged later, but as long as you bring up Atlanta, Jordan Hudson apparently was, when they were at the Super Bowl this year or somewhere, in this New York Times article, they said she was wearing some sort of shirt that was throwing shade at the Falcons, like a t-shirt that had it had either the score of the game or that it was a Super Bowl 51 t-shirt. That was a Super Bowl that was here in Houston where the Falcons blew the lead. She's loyal to that degree, I guess, you know?
I guess. I mean, if you're that's like, okay, what about the 31 other teams that didn't even interview him? She wants to penalize the Falcons for at least actually giving her boyfriend a chance.
I would say give her time.
Yeah.
she'll find, you know, shade of 31 other teams. I think she's got it in her.
Honestly, I feel like when her images first surfaced a year or two ago, and I thought, well, that's a pretty young lady.
Yeah.
And now, over the course of a year or two, it feels like every picture I see of her
crazy
or
eyes.
Video or anything, she's got the crazy eyes.
Crazy eyes. Yeah,
she looks like she all of a sudden seems like a 37-year-old, really disgruntled, the psychotic wife.
She
of
does
some
not
sort.
Look 24, I will say that.
Right.
She got an
right.
older look to her for sure.
Which, and not like in an aging, oh, she's got crow's feet or anything, just kind of the look in her eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
She's had enough. She's and she's not going to take it anymore.
Yep. All right, so yeah, text in your take. Where D'Amico stacks up on this head coach list.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, so Seth, I was in the course of just, you know, reading things and doing stuff for the show yesterday, I came across a few, really the last couple days, because a couple of these have been in the holster. But, you know, we do Take a Mania on Friday. If you missed it yesterday, we had a good segment with Ross Tucker at 9 o'clock yesterday. It was a fun segment where it felt good afterwards that we came clean with him, that he was the genesis of our bad take segment that we do every Friday, Take a Mania. That was a good idea by you to let Ross know. You know, we're friends with him. We got to be honest with him. So we told him that his take on giving bad reviews to restaurants so it's easier to get reservations was the genesis of Take a Mania, our bad take segment. He was happy to hear that he was unseated after 1 week by Angelo Cataldi, good friend of his in the Philadelphia radio community, who then held the title for a couple of months for his take on Andy Reid. So we do that segment every Friday at 9 a.m. So stay tuned for that this Friday. I found a few candidates for Take a Mania, and you don't need to, you know, we don't need to adjudicate how bad it is or whether this will win. But I just want to put this out there so people maybe know, and you know, Seth, what's coming up on Friday.
Wet my appetite.
Yeah, wet your appetite. That's right. This is a bit of an appetizer. Boogie Cousins, former NBA player, at one time thought to be one of the 5 or 10 best players in the league, and then his Achilles tendons went out on him, and yada, 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 he was a member of one of the worst Rocket teams ever in 2021. But he was on a podcast yesterday. It was the one that Chandler Parsons does with Michelle Beadle and them. And he was on there, and he had one of the worst trade proposals that I think I've ever heard.
Does Nico keep that pick? Does he keep that pick or what? What you think?
Okay, you can package that, PJ, some other guys, Gafford. Okay,
hang on, pause, man. I set that up poorly. The trade proposal involves Cooper Flagg and the Dallas Mavericks. The Nico they're talking about is Nico Harrison. Does Nico Harrison trade Cooper Flagg for ...
Does Nico keep that pick? Does he keep that pick or what? What you think?
Okay, you can package that, PJ, some other guys, Gafford to Milwaukee.
Cooper's the unknown technically.
Now we got Giannis back in play.
So you...
Done.
I mean...
This is a Price is Right moment.
Kevin Durant wouldn't be a bad move there either with that number one pick. So,
but would you would get rid of a young Cooper Flagg for Kevin Durant? No, because I'll be honest, I get because he's young.
Nico's already on record saying it's a 3-year window as far as winning a championship.
True,
so Cooper Flagg doesn't fit that window. A Kevin Durant does. So I absolutely think he'll trade that number one pick. I think that's an option for him.
That doesn't mean, because the window is the next 3 years, doesn't mean you just go all get guys who are only going to play for another 3 years.
We're only going to have 3 years, and then I'm planning on retiring after we win the championship or whatever. Yeah.
There's a chance that Cooper Flagg comes in and is a more productive player than a 37-year-old Kevin Durant. And you've got him for the next however many years. You know, like if Cooper Flagg is all that, he could be an all-star next year.
Yeah, the one host like agreed with him emphatically. Like, nope, not he's not in that 3-year window. Nope, yeah, Cooper Flagg wouldn't be a part of that 3-year window.
Imagine trading Cooper Flagg? There's certain levels of number one overall pick in any sport.
Yeah,
but there's a line that's drawn where you go, okay, this guy's special, and Cooper Flagg is viewed as special. I don't know, he's not viewed as Wemby. But he certainly isn't viewed as like the one of the French guys that got picked last year, number one overall.
Right, yeah, and that's not to say that he's going to become like Kevin Durant or anything. It's just that when you have a young prospect
19.
That, like that, yeah. Yes, who's that good, that you just I can't imagine there's hardly any GM in the league that would make that.
They're all laughing at that.
Trade. Yeah.
Well, if
yeah.
there is a GM who would make that trade, it would be Nico Harrison. He did trade Luka for a bucket of balls and Anthony Davis, so there is that. So that we may be hearing that one again a little later on this week. And then there's a couple takes related to this, to the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese thing. And we're not going to dip into the racial part of this thing, which that fire continues to burn 2 and 3 days later here on the internet. This was Ryan Clark. This was the one part of the Ryan Clark 3 or 4 minute take on RG3 and RG3 being married to a white woman. This is the one part that has nothing to do with RG3 that I thought was just a really off-base take.
I think Asia Wilson is the face of the league. Asia Wilson is the best player in the league. Caitlin Clark is the most important player in the WNBA.
Okay, it's a short take, but like that's when we make these distinctions, like so-and-so is the most valuable. Like the one take I hate is when people go, this guy over here is the most valuable player. He may not be the most valuable player of the league, but he's most valuable to his team.
Like yeah. You get into the MVP discussions, and it always becomes an argument about about the definition of valuable. There's 29 different types of MVPs that people want to
get. Yes, but the part of this that I'm adjudicating here is the whole face of the league thing. It's inarguable that Caitlin Clark is the face of the WNBA right now.
Right, whether it should or not, it doesn't mean she's right. Whether she should be based on basketball or anything else, you can argue about that
yes.
or on track, like all of that. But in terms of the actual public front-facing WNBA,
yeah.
like people associate to a much greater degree the Caitlin Clark right now. Like, it's bringing people to the sport bringing people to the league.
Especially because Ryan Clark chased it with Caitlin Clark is the most important player in the league.
Right.
That's what made it so weird. Like, no. And Caitlin Clark's really good. By the way, Caitlin Clark last night, how about this for a number? Tied the career record. She's been in the league for a year and like a week. She has now tied the career record for 20-point 10-assist games in the WNBA. After 42 games, she's played a full season in two games, has tied the career record. She's tied with Courtney Vandersloot, who did it in 430 games. So she is now tied for being the career leader in 2010 games in WNBA history, two games into her sophomore year in the league. That's why.
Caitlin Clark reminds me of that movie that came out with Timothée Chalamet about Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
The Bob Dylan movie there.
Yeah.
One of the big points in Bob Dylan's career was when he went to the Newport Folk Festival and decided to play electric. And that's when all the folk music people, you know, started hating him.
Yeah.
But like they were talking at the folk festival, there's this one scene where Pete Seeger is explaining to Bob Dylan, like, look, we were this little folk music was just this little thing. And nobody really paid much attention to it, and we were going along all right. And then you showed up, and all of a sudden it blew up into like this Newport Folk Festival and folk music in general just being huge.
Yeah.
And it was all because Bob Dylan was on the scene.
Yep.
I feel like that's where the WNBA is a little bit with Caitlin Clark,
yeah.
where it doesn't matter whether you can argue about who's a better player or anything else like that, but it's undeniable that she is bringing so much attention to the league. So Bob Dylan became the face of folk music above and beyond all of these other all-time great folk singers because, yes, he brought eyeballs to it.
No
or
question.
Eardrums to it in that case.
Yeah, like she is undoubtedly the face of the league. I'm not here to argue Asia Wilson versus Caitlin Clark, who's the better player, because I'll be honest with you. Don't watch a lot of Asia Wilson games. I do watch some Caitlin Clark games. She's very good.
Well, Michael Jordan in the early 80s,
yeah.
you know, was despite all the great players he was playing with, I mean, or in the mid-80s, became just the face of the league.
Absolutely. That's a really good example right there. Yes, he was the face of the league. The other one here, the other take, Monica McNutt is an analyst on ESPN. And she was given takes on this Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese thing and had this to say on Get Up a couple of days ago.
Anytime something happens with the two of them, one is automatically put as a victim and one is automatically put as someone who needs to be saved. When in reality, both are excellent competitors. They both said this was a basketball play. Now, Greeny, let's be honest. If this was the other way around, oh, Lord, you can only imagine how the conversation would have gone.
Okay, the implication there, if this were the other way around, if this were Angel Reese decking Caitlin Clark. Woo. Imagine what the conversation
would
be.
Well, and it wasn't
like.
Decking. It was a hard foul.
Yeah. Well, I say that only because Angel Reese has legitimately decked Caitlin Clark a few times.
Right. No, that's what there have been multiple instances
of
that.
My point.
Yeah, there's no imagining about it.
That's my point. Monica, go to the internet. There are sizzle reels everywhere right now of Caitlin Clark getting shoved by Angel Reese. So, like, your take is imagine if it were the other way around. We can.
Yeah.
I get your point. And I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, black people who don't like Caitlin Clark and white people that don't like Angel Reese. That exists. I understand that out there. But it's happened before. You can go find it. Yeah.
It's really, honestly, though, the Angel Reese being despised or stood up for and like whatever feud, because there's no actual basketball feud between the two. Caitlin Clark's a much better basketball
player
so far in the WNBA than Reese. But that's another dynamic, you know, is there's like a boxing element to this
for sure
where it's it people are picking sides and paying attention.
Look, my take on this whole thing, not the whole thing it's blown up into, but just the foul itself and the aftermath and the conflict between the two, which is this is just the latest chapter in a saga that goes back to college with these two, is that from a basketball standpoint, I like it. I like that these two don't like each other, and I'm cool. Like, Caitlin Clark's a much better player than Angel Reese. Is Caitlin Clark somehow elevating Angel Reese's profile because the two are in this kerfuffle together? Maybe. However, I like conflict. I like this stuff. It makes it interesting. It makes it exciting. Now, I don't want them to get into a fist fight or anything, but the fact that we like having some sports hate in our sports. At least I know that I do, and that's why I said yesterday, Seth, when we did Pettycast, I'm like, why can't this just be a hard foul between two basketball players?
Well, because this is what happens in this situation, especially, is it becomes the true basketball fans or the true WNBA fans, they're now put in a situation where they say, I really like Caitlin Clark, but then on social media and the experience that so many people have with it is that then all of a sudden the people that like Angel Clark or hate that like Caitlin Clark or hate Angel Reese for all the wrong reasons and vice versa, they join the fray.
Yeah.
And it becomes impossible because so many people just take in so much social media now, it's impossible to just be a fan of it without a bunch of other people chiming in.
Yep.
And that's what makes it a miserable experience for people. Right. Where before social media, that same element was there with Magic Johnson versus Larry Bird, but you didn't have to hear about it. And by saying you really liked Larry Bird, all of a sudden some hillbilly wasn't hopping on right behind you and saying like, yeah, and I got some feelings about segregation too.
Yeah, well, yeah. And the debate shows throw kerosene on the fire as well. We didn't have those back in the day either. You know, they throw kerosene on the fire. So there's that as well. So I say all this to say you might be hearing those takes again on Friday at 9:00. I don't know if this is take-a-mania but I saw this yesterday. Joe Burrow, okay, would I want C.J. Stroud saying these things that Joe Burrow was saying about the Bengals' schedule yesterday?
Playing in Baltimore for the fourth straight primetime year isn't ideal. Maybe we could get one of those in Cincinnati next year, please. Maybe an international game next year, too. Part of the reason I wanted to do the quarterback show, I wanted to help grow the game internationally, and so to not have a stage like that is a little disappointing, because I feel like I've consciously worked hard to try to grow the game internationally over the last 18 months or so. So hopefully at some point in my career we can go over there.
So the question, he was asked about the schedule, and so he's being asked a question about the schedule. So I always hesitate, Seth, to when someone's being forthcoming to criticize them for being forthcoming. The first part of that where he's talking about, well, we're, prime time against the Ravens in Baltimore again for the fourth straight year. A part of me's like, yeah, okay, deal with it. It's the schedule. Like your schedule's never going to be perfect.
Right. I think he's saying there, the first thought was like, oh, you sound scared of the Ravens. But I think it's more, I think he was coming at it more from like, yeah, I'd like our home fans to have a primetime game versus the Ravens.
Maybe,
I think that's how he meant it. He was almost talking like he was the commissioner there. I took more umbrage with like him being the guy that's growing the game internationally.
That was fun. I was on the quarterback series on Netflix.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize he had this initiative to grow the game internationally. Sounds to me like he wants to be an international icon. That's what bothers me about it.
Yeah,
I want people I want people at Fashion Week to know who I am.
He is one of those guys too.
Yeah,
he is one of those fashionistas that shows up on the red carpet at a lot of stuff. Joe
Burrow.
He was at the Met Gala.
I've been trying to grow the game. No, Joe, you've been trying to score in foreign countries with different.
Right.
You've got a bucket list, and that's what it helps you to go travel.
He makes it sound like he's walking through the Congo with a football and all these kids running after him. Like everybody's barefoot running through. Yeah.
Was he been like setting up youth camps internationally? He's taken a few trips that were paid for.
He's
in the
up there
season
in a parka with a bunch of Eskimos in the Arctic Circle, sitting there teaching him the game of football. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not happening. So there you go, Joe Burrow. Yeah, I'll accept your excuse for him on the Baltimore thing. That's a good one.
A lot of people last year had the they were almost retroactively upset with CJ doing so many podcasts last year.
Yeah.
And he's been very, very quiet this last offseason. The one thing that genuinely kind of worried me was how much time he spent overseas in Asia with Micah Parsons and the whole the sumo wrestling. He didn't sumo wrestle. He was wearing the outfit, but Micah Parsons actually sumo wrestled a little bit. That's the kind of stuff I don't know. That was a bit much for me.
Yes.
I don't need international CJ. I need stay at home.
No,
CJ.
2025 CJ has been delightful so far. Not that I don't like hearing him talk or seeing him, but like as far as feeling like he's locked and loaded and ready for this season, I feel pretty good about it.
I think for CJ, he's also like, I feel like he feels obligated to do the right thing in a lot of situations. And when you're a famous quarterback, a lot of that includes people asking, not demanding, but asking for things for you to do nice things or be at this event or do that. And you got to learn how to say no at some point, because it'll run you ragged. If you're trying to always be a good guy and help somebody out, there is an inexhaustible supply of people that are going to be asking you for those things.
Learning to say no.
Knowing when to put the wall up is a tough thing for somebody that's a conscientious young person.
Learning to say no is a skill. There's no doubt about it. You gotta learn how to do that, or else you're going to have everybody coming after you for sure.
Especially when people are just asking you, like, hey, can you come to this charity event? Can you come to that charity event? It's not just the podcast. It's a lot, and you end up saying no a lot.
That's a whole day, man. Like, not that charity events aren't good things to do, but like someone like CJ probably gets asked to do dozens
of
them.
It's the Superman conundrum, Sean. Yeah. At some point I need to take a break. Yeah. I gotta let a bus full of old nuns go off the bridge every now and then.
Sorry about it. Yeah.
Superman needs a Z's, okay?
Yep. Heading up to the Fortress of Solitude. Deuces. Yeah. I'm out of here for a week. Drive safe, everybody. I can't rescue you off the cliff. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Someone says NGL. That stands for not going to lie. Burrow's game does back it up, though. No, Joe Burrow's an excellent football player. I just the cut in unto itself in a vacuum was interesting to me. It will not wind up in take a mania. It was not a bad take. All right, back to the Astros we go. The Astros lose last night. Scouting report on Jose Altuve from a Houston icon. How did this person do giving a scouting report on a baseball broadcast about Jose Altuve? We will judge coming up next.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Astros lose last night 3-2. I guess there's a couple ways to look at this game. They were up 2-0 in the eighth inning, and the bullpen comes in. Not the frontline bullpen guys, although Okert's been very good this year. But Okert and Caleb Ort give up the three runs to the Rays in the eighth and the ninth inning. The Astros get walked off on a sacrifice fly, 3-2, the final score. And I guess there's two ways to look at this. One is this is yet another game where the offense doesn't pick you up. They had opportunities. They only score two runs. The other thing is, I guess from a bullpen standpoint, Seth, is in this day and age when everybody's watching load management and pitch counts and things like that, is that when you're on a stretch of 17 straight days, when you're in the 12th game of a stretch of 17 straight games, there is going to be a game or two in there where you just don't have Josh Hader and Brian Abreu available to you. You're going to rest them.
If this wouldn't be as big of a concern if they actually had healthy pitchers, you've seen a rookie and now a guy that you picked up off the street last summer with an injury showing up and pitching in games that you didn't expect to have them pitch. Yep. That's the hard part. So it's really, really hard for me to get upset at the bullpen last night when the bullpen has been the absolute best thing on this baseball team as a platoon.
Yeah, no, I wish it hadn't happened. It hurts, no doubt, but I'm not angry. I'm not angry with the bullpen. I think the positive story from this game was Brandon Walter last night. Brandon Walter, who's kicked around the minor leagues in the Red Sox system for about 4 or 5 years, was viewed as a rising prospect by them. eventually made it to the big leagues for about 9 games with the Red Sox 2 years ago. Didn't pitch very well. Was out of baseball with an injury last year. The Astros pick him up in August of last year. And he comes in yesterday for his first appearance as an Astro, and he throws 5 shutout innings in a big spot for this team. Here was Joe Espada last night after the game talking about Brandon Walter's performance.
You know what? He's kind of funky. He gives you different looks, like the cutter against righties. Works well, induces ground balls. Sweeper against lefties. I think his repertoire is actually pretty solid.
Okay.
He's funky. I like having a funky pitcher.
Funky like a monkey. Yeah. Yeah.
He's it's the kind of competition for fifth starter or guy that who are you going to rely on at the end of the season if another injury or what have you. I mean, there's Spencer Arrigetti's rehab. There's Lance McCullers. What the hell is he? Colton Gordon. Okay. I like what I've seen. See you back in the minors. And now you add Brandon Walter to the mix. And I'm missing somebody there in terms of the Gusto.
Gusto. Yeah.
What the hell is a Gusto anyway?
These guys like Colton Gordon, and especially, you know, a guy like Brandon Walter, who's 28 years old now. So he's, you know, like, he's getting down to it. You're a minor leaguer and you're in your late 20s. Like, the clock is ticking as to what you are. There is a spot open right now with the Astros. Like, when everybody's healthy, it's going to be Hunter Brown, who pitches today, by the way. Must see. Long lunch today, everybody. Noon start. Take a long lunch. Watch Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, Spencer Arrigetti, Rinel Blanco. I'm putting Lance in there as well. Just I'll put an asterisk next to Lance that we're still not quite sure like where he's at. But let's say Lance progresses and that he gets his, you know, gets the velocity up and things like that. That last spot's open right now. That was supposed to be Hayden Wisniewski. He's done for the year. So if I'm a guy like Brandon Walter, Seth, or Colton Gordon, or Ryan Gusto, who's been on the staff all year, I'm looking at this like American Idol right now. Like, every start is an audition for me to possibly be that sixth guy right now. There is a spot for an arm on this team.
They're just like Christian Walker is auditioning to be somebody that I'm happy is on this baseball team. I can't get banned at the bullpen in a game that they lose because they can't score more than 2 runs.
Oh my God.
So, and I don't need, like, Christian Walker almost getting ejected arguing about balls and strikes. I don't want to see Christian Walker arguing balls and strikes as long as he continues to strike out. So, on average, I'm going to side with the ump. I can't get upset with you.
No. First base for the Astros since Yuli left has just been a death spot, man. That's depressing to watch. Christian Walker falls below 200, his batting average last night, in case you didn't know. Struck out a couple of times. All right, so Bun B, Houston icon, was on a podcast where they were kind of doing an adjacent conversation to an MLB game going on, and it was interesting. I don't know if this is something they regularly do. The two hosts were Dexter Fowler, former Astro outfielder at the worst of times with the Astros. I believe he was their starting center fielder in the opening day in 2013. And Jamal Crawford, who, of course, played in the NBA for a number of years. And Bun B was on with the two of them. And they're just kind of chit-chatting about baseball and music while there's a game going on adjacent to them. And I guess they're sort of chiming in on that. I only saw this clip, so I don't know the whole dynamic of the entire conversation. But they asked Bun B about Jose Altuve. Seth, I want to play Bun B's scouting report on Jose Altuve, and you tell me how you think Bun B did in his assessment of Astros great Jose Altuve.
If you think about how quickly that bat comes around, right? If you think about his center of gravity, right? And you look at his eye for the ball, you can't really ask for better qualities in a hitter with a frame like that. You know what I'm saying? He's 100%. Hard to pitch against. He's hard to pitch against. So if you throw your best at him, he can and will take it yard. You know what I'm saying? He's quick to the base, so it's not easy to throw him out either. There's so many different advantages that Jose Altuve gives to being a good baseball player. I dare say great baseball player. He carries all of those qualities, and he's a great teammate. He's a guy that doesn't get, you know, he doesn't let the game get him down quickly. He'll go through the cycles. He'll keep working until he gets that pitch that he's looking for. He keeps his guys engaged. And everybody knows that if we're in a pinch and we need to get a guy on base, we can count on Jose to do that. And if we need to potentially knock one out and walk off or something, he can do that too. I mean, there's so many things that he can do. And he's a great defensive player too. Like, he's not just a hitter. He's a great defensive player too, man. all around, you know, perfect Astro. Okay. As far as I'm concerned.
Now, I agree with that last part. He is an all around perfect
He's
Astro.
He's describing the career of Jose Altuve to somebody who's not an Astros fan.
Okay, thing. There you go.
And
okay.
Always with the outside, because, and always when you're defending, when you're describing Jose Altuve, you know that the follow up question at some point is going to be, yeah, but didn't he wear a buzzer?
Yeah,
I saw Pat McAfee say that he wore a buzzer.
Wore a buzzer.
And that's where I get my news.
He
from,
was the one apologizing for the cheating scandal. Yeah.
Right, yeah. The first thing he touched on, I think, is the part about his bat speed or his hand speed specifically. That's where Altuve has turned a weakness into a strength. Okay, he's short. Yeah, all right. You know what? Those are smaller levers that he's got swinging the bat. You can get the bat around a lot more quickly.
Yep.
And then also his ability to hit outside the zone. Even though sometimes he overestimates his ability, but his ability to kind of just play beyond where a pitcher probably feels like a hittable ball is for him is one of his biggest threats. And that Jose Altuve still exists, as we saw evidence of last night, Sean.
He's the two things. I think you're right. I think it was more of an overall description because he isn't as quick to the base as he used to be. That's just his speed is down. He's 35 years old, and I think the defensive part. Definitely a career description.
Career description, except then he's looked like a 19-year-old Jose Altuve at second base the last couple days.
Did you see the catch on the pop-up last night that he had?
Yeah.
Run back to the home plate. You know, you're right. Maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe I'm the bad scout. I liked it. Good job, Bun B. I thought overall not a bad job there on that podcast, given a description of Jose Altuve. And the part, all caps I put, great teammate. He is a great teammate. Mm-hmm. He took the bullets for that being better than everybody else scandal. Took all the bullets for it. All right.
I didn't like hearing about Brendan Rodgers, who was getting a break the last couple of days, just not being a fan of the heat and humidity in Houston. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's great. I don't.
What, driving to the ballpark?
Like, you're lucky to be on a baseball team, damn it.
You play indoors.
Yeah.
It's not even like you've got to stand out there in the heat and humidity and do your job.
I mean, I understood exactly where he's coming from. He's played in Colorado forever. This has got to be. I mean, look at his career numbers and the fact that they're way better than they should be just because he played in that altitude. But then that crisp, dry air, you know, being out there and you don't even realize you're sweating because it's all evaporating.
It's nice. No, I lived there 3 years. It's great. As someone who coaches text messages, someone who coaches a little baseball from time to time, Jose Altuve is obviously a great player, but you would never teach a child to bat like he does.
Right, yeah. Does everything he does defies explanation or expectation. That's just what he does.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Into the 8 o'clock hour we go. All right.
He's really the Travis Hunter of previous generation. Sean.
He's changing the game of baseball.
Yeah.
It's going to be all 5'6" people once Jose retires. All right. Graphic I saw showing the best players in the NFL under 25, under the age of 25 at each position. I think there's three Texans in the conversation. Did any of them make the cut? And if they didn't, are they better than the guys that did? We will hit that coming up next.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.